Chapter 17. Quiet, Arla hisses, practically shoving John deeper into the shadows. Tor's here. Vizsla, Noel says, and she slides into the gap between the computer bank and the wall, then hunkers down on John's other side. He finally crawled out of his hole? And right into this one, Arla confirms, grim. She eyes Noel, hand tightening faintly around John's arm, and asks, "The Jedi?" "One of them." Noel grins at her, all teeth, and glances back at the doorway. Carefully, John frees himself just a little from Arla's grip, a flicker of worry rising. She feels like rage and fear and poorly contained fury, ready to spill out at the first opportunity, and he shifts enough to grip her wrist and says softly, "You're going to try to kill him." It's not a question, and Arla doesn't answer. "His death is mine," she tells John. "And if you steal this one from me, I won't be nearly as restrained about cashing in your life debt as my father." John grimaces, letting go, but with that roil of emotion right beneath the surface, he can hardly blame her for her sharpness. Right now, Arla feels like nothing so much as a detonator that's primed and waiting to go off. "Jaster doesn't know about this place," he says. "We need to tell him." "After I murder Tor," Arla says flatly. "He's here, John. I've been looking for him for years, and he's right here." She's almost trembling with anger, steely with it, torn by it. John finds her hand in the darkness between them, grips it, feels her clutch at his fingers in return. "There are too many of them," he says, low, and Arla makes a sound of vicious denial, but she doesn't let go. "The chatterbox is right," Noel says, quiet, her eyes on the door and the footsteps beyond it. "Vizsla's going to have plenty of guards, and if we attack him, it's going to be impossible to get back to the ships. Take him out, and we all die in the process." "I don't care," Arla snaps, too loud, and John freezes as the footsteps pause. With a quiet curse, Noel raises a hand, narrows her eyes, and further down the hallway, something thumps. The footsteps turn, hurry, and Noel slides out, grabs for one of Arla's arms as John gets the other. "I care," Noel says. "Get yourself killed on your own time, but that brother of yours is waiting, and he looked like he was about to march in here, wounds and all, to help you." Arla's ragged breath is too loud in the quiet, but she doesn't resist as John and Noel pull her out of the room and down the hall. There are people near the door they entered through, at least one squad, and no way out there without giving themselves away. But at the next intersection, John makes a turn, heads up a sloping corridor, and emerges on a walkway to the open air, blinding in the sunlight. He winces, ducking down, and Arla catches his arm and tugs him forward. "They were talking about a strategy meeting," she says, low. "That's why I was waiting in that room. But Tor is definitely here." John nods, frowning as he leans over slightly to check the courtyard below. It's bare, probably meant for people with jetpacks to be able to land easily, and several doors open out onto it, none of them particularly right. Nothing is pulling him in any certain direction, and he hesitates, then slides back. "Here," he says, and Noel slants him a glance. "If anyone is landing or taking off, they'll see us," she warns, and John grimaces, well aware of the risk. The wall is just behind them, though, and an escape over it is more likely than if they had to fight their way through the halls. Arla's hand finds John's again, goes tight, and she slides down to her belly, tips her head to scan the other side of the courtyard. "This must be where Tor's been training his men," she says grimly. "We haven't been able to figure out where he had the resources, but the bastard was hiding out here. And if he has this one, I'll bet he has more." John dips his head, thinking of the Firehand gang, abandoned when he heard about Montross's presence on a nearby planet. They have ties to Gargon, as well as the Zanbar system just to the galactic south. The Death Watch isn't supposed to have a presence on Gargan, though, and he hadn't looked into it further. The Firehand must have been running supplies to Gargan for them, he says quietly. That was the connection I missed. Arla grunts, her gaze fixed on the courtyard. If we look along their smuggling routes, I bet we'll find a lot of other bases, she says, vicious. Scum likes to gather. There's the hiss of a door sliding open, footsteps. Arla goes painfully tense as a figure in black armor and a red cape sweeps out, trailed by a pair of lieutenants, a double squad behind them. The same armor colors as Jaster, John thinks, cold. He wonders if it's a deliberate echo. Knowing the man inside that armor, it definitely is. Double the guard on the other base, Tor says sharply, and make sure they know the ship is coming. I want a full wing sent out to meet it, and if Jaster's little fools are anywhere near the system, reroute it. Eyes narrowing, John considers Tor, then glances over at Noel, but she shakes her head, clearly just as unsure what Tor is talking about. Sir, one of the lieutenants says, if you just used it, you'd have twice the men overnight. We could crush the true Mandalorians. I already own the Darksaber, Tor snaps. That should be enough to sway the fools. I'm not about to lose it to a mistake. Coward, John thinks, and tightens his grip on Arla's hand. He won't fight Jaster directly, but he sends his troops out to raise civilian towns and burn crops. Even though he holds the Darksaber, he won't use it because someone might beat him and take it. I'll kill him, Arla breathes, and her hand goes bruisingly tight around John's, but she's not moving. I'll kill him. I'm going to kill him. Yes, sir, the lieutenant says quickly, stepping back. I'll dispatch extra fighters immediately. Good. Make sure the Omen is fully manned and check every man on it. I want anyone suspicious shot on the main deck. Sir. The lieutenant thumps his fist against his breastplate, then jerks his head at two of the troopers and splits off. The others keep right to Tor's heels, following him across the square and through another door as he snaps orders. As the door slides shut behind him, all of the tension slides out of Arla. She puts her head down on the stone, digs the fingers of her gauntlet into the walkway, and then bangs her fist down hard. John can feel the scream of rage vibrating in her throat, trapped behind her teeth, and he pulls her up, gets an arm around her, and tugs her on. Arla, he says, and Arla snarls, grabs his shoulder. The blur of her hand is enough to make John flinch, but Arla just folds forward into him, gripping tightly at his robes, thumping her forehead down against his shoulder. If I'd had a sniper rifle, he would have been mine, she hisses, and John lets out a faintly shaky breath, steals himself through the lingering shiver of instinctive fear, and touches the back of her helmet. The chance will come again, he says, soft. I know it, and you do too. Arla makes a low, furious sound, but nods. She pushes upright, then draws both of her blasters and says, they're going to see us escaping. Then we'll move quickly, John says. Noel huffs in amusement, but tosses her mane back and doesn't protest. There's a flicker of something dark and suspicious in her that's buried before John can ask about it, and she grabs the edge of a doorframe, tips her head, and says, first one to get shot is the loser. Arla barks out a laugh, a burst of static over the speakers, and ignites her jetpack, surging up from the walkway. There's an instant shout, but Arla aims and fires without ever slowing, shoots over the wall, and vanishes into the trees. John scales the wall after Noel, catches sight of the sniper just bringing his rifle up, and reaches. Folded space spits him out right on top of the man, and John hurls him off the wall, catches the hum of engines starting up, and the sound of rising calls. Noel hits the wall beside him, then hurls herself down, and John follows, landing heavily among the trees. Faye's ship, you should go, he says, and Noel slants him a glance he can't quite read and nods. I'll meet her there, she says. Gotta calm. John touches his, ducking behind a tree as blaster fire peppers the ground behind them, and lets Noel see the code. She mutters it to herself once, then nods, reaches out deliberately, slowly enough to see, and nudges his shoulder with a fist. Thanks for the rescue, Vagrant, she says, and grins at him. There are a few too many teeth in it for any sort of decorum. We'll meet again soon. "Force be with you, Master Venari," John says, and she winks at him and splits off, vanishing into the trees. John glances back, hearing jetpacks and heavy boots approaching, and thinks of the trees just beyond Arla's ship, deep enough cover to conceal him completely. He takes a moment, even as a voice shouts an order right behind his hiding spot, then pulls his cloak more tightly around himself and shifts. Space bends, and John steps out of the darkness, hears a shot close enough to make him flinch. It's not aimed at him, though, passes a meter wide and hits a black drone painted with the red Death Watch symbol, and Django makes a sound of victory even as he ducks back behind a tree. "Any more?" he calls. Seated cross-legged on the ramp, Faye cocks her head. "Not close," she says, and opens her eyes. "John." "Master Faye," John says, and Django startles, curses, and whips around, blaster aimed. John just slides out of the shadows, pushing his hood back slightly, and says, "Arla is on her way." "Did she get lost?" Django asks, annoyed, and lowers his blaster with a heavy breath. "What the hell did she find that scouting took this long?" "Tor," John says, and Django curses viciously, bringing his blaster up again as the sound of a jetpack closes in. John knows it's Arla, doesn't have to look back, and he approaches Faye, then says quietly, "Noel said she would meet you back at your ship." Faye studies him for a second, then nods and rises gracefully, pulling her hood back up again. "Force keep you, John," she says, and when she leans in, the weight of that vast, bright presence is bright enough that John has to close his eyes. Faye presses a kiss to his forehead, then turns away, unhurried, entirely unalarmed by the blaster fire behind her, and is gone in an instant, swallowed by the trees. In the same moment, with a hum of thrusters, Arla hits the ground, staggers a step, and says, "Django, get us up in the air." "I'm going," Django snaps, but he grabs her arm as he passes, hauls her up the ramp along with him, and leaves John to follow. "Where the criff is the other Jedi?" "Rescued," John says, and waves the ramp closed. A moment's thought slamming another drone out of the air and into a tree. Faye has a ship at the other end of the canyon. The engines start up with a rumble, and an instant later, Django has them in the air, arrowing almost straight up so quickly that John is almost thrown off his feet. He catches a cargo strap on the wall, then leaps, and Faye's healing means it doesn't even twinge, something he hadn't even realized he was bracing for. Django casts a brief look back as he slides into the cockpit, then makes a sound of acknowledgement. "They'd better not need any more rescuing," he says, and then drags three switches down and throws them into hyperspace the second they hit the edge of the atmosphere. The rush of quiet and lack of minds pulls a breath from John, and he sinks down in the spare seat, pulls his hood off. "They won't," he says. "Master Faye will keep them safe." Django snorts derisively. "She isn't even carrying a lightsaber," he says. "You Jedi are good for one thing, and she's completely ignoring it." "She's a healer," John says, "and the most powerful Jedi in the Order. She doesn't need a lightsaber." There's a chance he's exaggerating, because he hasn't met every Jedi, but Faye is powerful in a way he's never felt before, and John has perfect faith that she can get to Nol and get her ship in the air long before any of the Death Watch reaches her. "I thought you'd bring them back with us," Arla says, and drags her helmet off. Her face is pale, her mouth a thin line of red in her face, and she feels ragged. John watches her for a long moment, then shakes his head. "They were already surprised I was with Mandalorians," he says quietly. Arla snorts, curling forward to scrub her hands over her face. "Marriage would have been a step too far, even for that Jedi," she asks sardonically. "Arla," Django says quietly. "I know," Arla says without lifting her head. "I know. But he was right there, and if he hadn't had two carking squads with him, I would have gutted him." John winces, makes the quick decision to pull his hood back up. The enemy shouting at him hardly bothers him, but this is Arla's grief and pain overflowing, and the furthest thing from comfortable to feel as if it's his own. "I got you back," Django says, and it's sharp, prickly. "I got you back from him. Don't you dare make me lose you to him again, Arla. I can't. I hate him," Arla cries and slams her fists against the control panel. Pulls back, like she's going to do it again, but Django catches her hands, hauls her right in and hugs her, and Arla curls against him, not crying, but shaking. Her voice breaks, low, furious sounds that are too angry to be sobs, and John takes a breath and closes his eyes, not sure how to help. Not sure if he should be here, watching this, when it's so clearly Arla fracturing. "I know," Django says, and it's tight, so angry it shakes as well. "We'll kill him. We'll kill him for our parents and for you. But don't Criffing die for him or it's worthless." "I know," Arla whispers, and pulls away. She rises, catching her helmet and dragging it on, then turns and stalks away, down the ramp and into the cargo area. No sound rises, and John turns his head to look, then gets to his feet. He still doesn't know what to say, but he thinks of Arla catching Miles' hand before he could touch John, of what he's caught in conversations between Arla and Jaster, the edge of guilt that Arla carries, how she's never without her armor. Curls his fingers in his own cloak, the hood hiding his face, and steals himself, then follows. Arla isn't throwing things, isn't punching walls. The hold is perfectly silent, entirely empty, and John crosses it to a door set into the wall, left ajar. Inside the small supply room, there are no lights, nothing but shadows thick and deep, and Arla is sitting in the middle of them, pressed back against the wall. Her helmet is in her hands, her head tipped forward to rest against the metal. She doesn't stir when John slips in, doesn't tell him to leave or offer a welcome, and after a moment, John sinks down beside her, a careful foot of space between them. "I'm not going to let Tor kill me," Arla says finally, and it's rough, half-strangled. "I wouldn't." John weighs his responses, the familiar aching wound he can feel in her, and closes his eyes. "No," he agrees quietly, "because then he was right about you." He won't fall, he thinks. The dark side is always there, always tempting, and there's a monster inside of him that he has to keep chained. But he won't fall, because if he falls, Dark Woman was right, and he can't bear that. Arla laughs, but there's nothing of humor in it. She drops her helmet, letting it roll away under one of the shelves, and curls forward, wrapping her arms around her knees. Her hair is in an intricate braid, and there's a golden ribbon wound through it, the end frayed like it's old. One of her hands fists around the frayed edge of it, clutching tight. "Tor took me," she says, "after he murdered our parents for helping Jaster. Jaster found Django, but Tor raised me, trained me. He brainwashed me into being his assassin, and then he sent me to murder Jaster. Everything I know is because of Tor, and I hate him so much. He tortured me. Jaster was what saved me, but no matter how much he's given me, everything I am is because of Tor." The words are just a fragment of a greater grief, and John doesn't answer for a long moment, lets the full weight of it settle. Breathes in, eyes on the shadows, and it's not the same, it isn't, but there are shades, maybe, that are uncomfortably similar. "Jaster," he thinks, and lets himself breathe out again, long and careful. Then, deliberate, he reaches out, touches Arla's fingers where they're wrapped tight around her braid. "Everything you are," he asks quietly, "or everything you were." It's not the same, but at the same time, all John can think of is Jaster's gentle, careful hands, the look in his eyes like John isn't just a Jedi, isn't just a weapon aimed against the dark. Like he matters, like his name is his own, like John's existence isn't just his lightsaber and his loyalty to the Order. John's never been so close to so many people before. Django, Arla, Miles, Jaster. None of this is familiar, and all of it is new, and all of it is changing him. And he's sure, without hesitation, that whatever Arla was when Jaster took her in, it changed her too. They can't shift what's at their core, what was burned into them. But they can change everything else, including how they use it. And that's the only thing that matters. Arla's laughter rasps like a sob in the darkness, and she curls forward more tightly, fingers going white-knuckled on her braid. She doesn't answer, doesn't lean into him, doesn't otherwise move, but John sits beside her in the darkness until the rage eases and settles into tired grief, until her grief slips down into something like acceptance. There's nothing to say, but the shared quiet, John thinks, says more than enough already. "Had a good night, Mandalore," Miles asks, the closest thing he ever gets to sweet. Jaster only just manages to stifle a groan as he drags himself into the sea across the table. The way his back cracks probably gives him away anyway. "I can't believe I let you talk me into sleeping on your floor," he says, and Miles smirks at him, unrepentant, and shoves his plate across the table. "I can't believe you were going to sneak out of your own room," he retorts. "As you've told me, at length." Jaster grimaces, snagging the first cup of caff that Miles pours and ignoring the dirty look it earns him. He's a little sore, a little tired, a little stiff, and, like sleeping out in the rain all night, morning waking up on Miles's cold floor has brought with it a grim sense of realization. This one, of course, is predicated on the fact that Miles was entirely correct, not that Jaster is actually going to tell him that. He likely already knows, regardless. Miles hums, pointed, and picks up his pad and a cup of caff. "I'm going to check in with the cooks and make sure everything is on schedule," he says, "and you have a meeting with the regional commanders at noon." "I remember, believe me," Jaster says ruefully. He spent most of the evening before Miles found him in strategy meetings, trying to pin down Death Watch bases and reposition troops to protect the most valuable targets on each planet. At this point, they're stretched so thin it's more a matter of deciding which pieces to sacrifice than anything, and Jaster hates it with a passion. Miles lets out a breath, tipping his head in wry agreement. "And find your son at some point and yell at him about going to his medical checkups. The droids messaged me that he skipped the one last night." Jaster sighs, but it's not surprising. Jango gets bored with medical far sooner than is good for him, and then entirely refuses to set foot anywhere near it. "I will," he agrees. "And it's the truth, but..." He needs to talk to John first. The very idea carries with it a shade of humiliation that Jaster usually tries to avoid, a vulnerability he's never been fond of, but at the same time, it's necessary. Miles was entirely correct about John not being a child, and if John is operating under the assumption that Jaster will hurt him, and sex is a good way to prevent that, it's a misconception that needs to be corrected immediately. Jaster would gladly accept any sort of sexual arrangement that John wanted, but only free of coercion. Only with both of them agreeing, free of leverage or politicking. "If you'll excuse me," Jaster says, not able to eat any more with the thought of the conversation looming. He rises, swallowing the rest of his caff, and Miles watches him go with a tolerant expression. "Say good morning to John from me," he says mildly. And Jaster huffs at him, but doesn't have any actual retort when they both know precisely where he's headed and why. "Make sure Arla remembers to give Zarin her armor," is all he manages, but that, at least, makes Miles groan like he's been shot, because they both know precisely how hard it is to pry Arla out of her armor at the best of times. "How about I help you not mortally offend your new husband instead?" he suggests. That almost sounds easier in comparison. Jaster scowls at him. "It is going to be a private conversation, thank you, and I'm leaving." "Leave then." Miles picks up his pad, ignoring Jaster entirely, and Jaster knows when he's been beaten. He leaves Miles to his wedding planning and heads for his rooms, half-heartedly trying to work the kinks out of his neck. It was a good idea to sleep somewhere else for the night, but it also brought up images of all the many ways Jaster could have handled John's kiss far better. Even the kindest person would be offended to be practically shoved off the bed over a simple kiss, and Jaster feels a flicker of guilt settle. He grimaces to himself, then raises a fist, knocks on his door, and pushes it open. "John," he says, stepping in, "I'm sorry to disturb your morning, but I thought we could... talk. The room is empty. There's no one there. Jaster stares at the empty interior for a long second, then frowns. It's quite early, and the droids haven't even brought John's breakfast tray yet. His cloak isn't hanging on its hook, and his boots are gone, but they were gone when Jaster was attempting to pack last night as well. And, even more worrying, his pack is still on the bed where he left it, half-filled, blocking most of the space where John would have slept. The bed doesn't look disturbed, and the whole room looks precisely as Jaster left it. Something in the pit of his stomach sinks, instinct and experience and a dark sort of dread, and Jaster curls his fingers tight into the doorframe and tells himself not to overreact. And then, hurried in a way that makes cold slide through Jaster's chest and spread, there are footfalls behind him. "Jaster," Miles says, and there's a deep concern in his voice that makes Jaster close his eyes and brace for the worst. I tried to calm Arla and she's not answering, and neither is Django. Arla and Django. Well, if someone was trying to get Jaster's attention, they certainly managed it, to say nothing of John. "John never returned last night," he says, and turns, meets Miles' eyes with something dark settling into his chest. Last time he slept elsewhere, an assassin broke in and tried to kill John. Apparently this time they were more ambitious. Miles takes a breath, then nods shortly. "I'll get search teams assembled," he says, and then into his calm. "Silas, Django, Arla, and the Jedi are all missing. Find whatever security footage you can."
"Missing?"
Silas's voice crackles across the line.
"But I thought they all left for the Gargan system yesterday."
End of chapter 17.